Welcome to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, where we discuss all things money because whether or not we like it, money matters. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French. And of course, it's this time of year where we get updates on our medical schemes and increases for 2023. Medical scheme membership's expensive. It's getting more and more expensive every year. But the question is, are we making the most of our benefits? And that is going to be our discussion for today. And joining me is medical scheme expert Andre Jacobs, who has just published a medical scheme guide entitled Medical Schemes Explained, Your Ultimate Guide to Using Your Medical Scheme Efficiently. So welcome, Andre.
Hi, Maya. Thanks a lot for inviting me to this chat. And I look forward to it, and hopefully it's informative to you and to your clients, listeners.
Yes, I hope so too, because I'm going to be picking your brain for the next half an hour. I think the starting point, and you actually write this, that, you know, the high cost of private, because of the costs of private medical scheme cover, right? Only about 48% of the employed, we talk about the employed populations, not even unemployed, belong to a medical scheme, and that the average family is paying 6,000 Rand or more a month for their medical scheme benefits. And you say that many are paying too much simply because they don't understand how their scheme works. So, you know, you're providing a lot of tips in your book. What do you find that the main issues are that members are not understanding and landing up paying so much more?
Yeah, if I have to sum it up in one tip, it's maybe the it's difficult to say one. Maybe I want to say two. The one is maybe the understanding the product that we have purchased. It's a financial services product like normal investment or life insurance policy or short-term insurance policy. Understanding really what you have purchased, I think, is the one important issue. The second issue that I think is important is understanding how to work this medical scheme. And that is why I speak about the efficient use of the medical scheme. And maybe if I can give you sort of an acronym, if I sum up some of the tips in the book, I think the acronym that I want to leave with you is maybe the acronym ACTION. And the A, we can talk about awareness, really understanding where I am, understanding my needs, understanding the types of options that I purchase, and understanding the rules of the medical scheme, I think is important. It's a product that I pay 6,000 Rand a month or more for my family. I should know what the rules are of that fund and understand how it works. Then the C stands for comply. And it's really, there's certain things that the medical scheme require you to do in terms of disclosure, using certain networks. We call it in our language designated service providers. There's certain timelines. You must submit your claims within 4 months. And there's certain compliance that you need to do in terms of chronic conditions that you may suffer from. You need to register those conditions. You need to make use of certain medication or providers. The T stands for trust. And what I think is important is making use of an intermediary I refer to as independence of thought. There's a range of intermediaries available in the market, and they provide a valuable service. But consumers should look at somebody that have an independence of thought. He wants to make use of an intermediary that represents his interest and not the lingo and the views of the medical scheme. He wants the person to stand in between him and the medical scheme. To also be doctor-wise. As you are intermediary-wise, you need to be doctor-wise, making sure that the doctor that you go to is somebody that you can trust, and that doctor has a good track record. And then also avoid Dr. Google. we often make use of Google and we get so much information, but on one topic, whether we should vaccinate or not vaccinate. There's a range of views. So I think your doctor is informed. The doctor can advise you which sites to actually go and visit and find information about your condition. I don't say avoid the internet. Yes, there's a lot of information there, but ask your doctor for reliable sources. And then the I of action stands for inspect. And what I mean by inspect is things like your claim statements. Go through your claim statements. Make sure that when it comes off your savings account, that it should come off your savings account. When it's not paid, make sure that it's a right reason not paid. So I think check your claim statement on a monthly basis. Medical schemes send correspondence about benefit and changes to the medical scheme. Look at that correspondence, because that correspondence forms part of your contract, of your rules. So in terms of that, make sure that you read it. And if you're unsure, you can then either contact the medical scheme or you can contact your intermediary. That then the third part of inspect is looking at your exclusions. Not every medical scheme covers you exactly for the same things, and they have certain exclusions that we need to make sure that we know that those conditions are excluded. The O stands for own it. And if you purchase a house, if I can use that example, you purchase a house in a complex, you want to go and participate in the body corporate. You talk about what's the rules, what are we doing in terms of the body corporate. And exactly the same with your medical scheme. In terms of your medical scheme, you actually have the ability to attend the annual general meeting. Now, if I take a medical scheme, most medical schemes, if they have an annual general meeting, they should actually rent out a soccer stadium or rugby stadium. That's the amount of people that should attend. But they actually use a small office because only 100 or 50 or 80 people pitch for the AGM. That we shouldn't do. It's our medical scheme. It belongs to us. We should actually participate in that AGM. I think also if we look at our assets that we have, we look after our assets, we maintain our assets, so we should also look after our health, maintain our health, stay healthy. And I think that's the own it. And then register on the medical scheme app. The medical scheme spend huge amounts of money developing apps and make your service experience with that medical scheme as efficient as possible. Understand that app, look at the information that I have on the app, so really own it. And then the last one is the numbers. So the N for action is the numbers. So look at the reimbursement rate. What did the medical scheme reimburse at? What does the doctor charge? Ask the doctor that question. Often when you ask them that question and you say, my medical scheme only pays X, the doctor usually charges X. So I think negotiate that. Obtain a quote in terms of serious conditions or illnesses. Ask what it's going to cost. If a doctor prescribes certain medication, ask him what a medication would cost. And really try and get the best deal. Yes, we want to go to the best doctor that we believe we should go to, but also make sure that you really get a good deal with the doctor in terms of affordability. And then in the numbers, sometimes a medical scheme is not enough and we need to have gap cover. And that assists us. And in a recent judgment of the FACE Ombud, the FACE Ombud said that today people can't be without a medical scheme. More than 50% of your specialists actually charge more than 100% that most medical schemes pay. So you need that additional cover. And then sometimes we just misuse, and that's in the numbers, I think is also important. We misuse the emergency room or the casualty wards. And we use it as a normal GP visit. And it's very expensive. When you go to a casualty ward, there's a lot of additional services that they by law have to provide, but it costs money. Diagnostic tests that they must do that wouldn't have been done in a normal practice at the GP. And for that reason, medical schemes have co-payments, and you will run out of your benefits more quickly if you actually use an ER or a casualty ward as a normal GP visit. Yes, when you need to go, you must go. But I'm talking about using it as a GP. So in your question, asking the question, what is the biggest tips or that I can share with you? I really think this acronym ACTION, be aware, comply, make sure that you can do the trust, the inspector, own it, and then the numbers. I think that's the most important that I want to leave with you
and Andre,
with your listeners.
I was just listening to you and I was making some notes because, first of all, it just really struck me for a moment. We spend 6,000 Rand a month on this, and how much attention are we spending on it? And that's actually, I thought for me, that was quite a kind of, I hadn't thought about it in those terms. I mean, you're spending, 72,000 Rand a year, and we're not spending enough time understanding what it is we purchased. So trust. I want to tell you a few things on trust. So I had, I've got an advisor who helped me with our medical scheme, and he understood the schemes well enough to say, you know what, this particular scheme and this plan is going to work for you because of your needs. And he was actually able to reduce our plan and make sure we were using the most efficient plan based on our needs. So not in, as a layperson, you may not know all of these options. You know, one scheme may be very different from another, and then within that scheme, they're different plans. So I found that insight that he gave us was very useful. And then when it comes to doctors and trust, I did this. I had an operation last year. And remember, check the numbers, or what I think I can't remember, inspect. So I asked for a quote, got the quote, sent it to the medical aid, recognized there would be a small co-payment, did all my homework. And then when, after the operation, I got this absolutely massive bill, double what the quote was. And I went back to it was submitted to the medical aid, you know, and all the rest of it. And I have gap cover. So technically speaking, I could have paid for it. But I thought, that wasn't what we agreed. And the doctor said, I didn't realize I would need this and the other. I said, no, hold on. You know, you inspected me, you gave me this quote. And he actually came down and I negotiated down. Then, I saved myself and my scheme money. Then I went and checked the bill from the hospital. And do you know that the hospital had charged me for an overnight stay and I'd left on the same day? So that's paid directly to my medical scheme. So I phoned it's paid by the medical scheme. So I wasn't saving myself money, I was saving my scheme's money. But if we all do that, we all reduce the costs, then our premiums don't go up so much. So we do need to be responsible. And I really agree with you. I think we do need to inspect all those claims. And also, when you see doctors, you know, over testing, you must understand that those are why we see 8-9% increases in our premiums every year. So if we collectively work together and question doctors and medical profession and make sure that they're billing us for what we've actually, you know, received, I think really, really important one, Andre.
It's definitely true. I recently dealt with a case of a person that went to a public hospital. And we often think that at public hospitals, you do not pay, you do pay. They apply a means test, and if you earn above a certain income, you have to pay. That person's account was 31,000 Rand, and after we looked at the account, and they also built for intensive care and high care while it was in general ward, and there's a lower tariff for that, the bill could be reduced to 12,000 Rand. So it is important that one actually checks those things. But in a medical scheme environment, you are 100% correct. If we all check that, because it's my money, I own it, then it will have a knock-on effect on contributions. And it's not only your medical scheme, it's also your gap cover. We must look at both. Where that knock-on effect lies. So you are 100% correct and well spotted. Thanks a lot, Maya.
Andre, now talking about the tips and finding getting your scheme to pay for what it should pay for, one of the biggest complaints I receive, right, is the refusal to pay for medication. In fact, that happened to my mom recently. She has to be on blood thinning tablets, and the one that she's supposed to be on doesn't suit her. She needs to be on another one. Her scheme will not pay. And you write about a woman who suffered from arthritis and her medical scheme did not want to pay for the expensive medication. You won her case and she did get the medication. So what tips can you give to someone in a situation like that?
Yeah, I think
I'm thinking for my mother. I'm taking notes.
There's a couple of things. So let me explain that case, and then if you allow me, I'll explain also quickly another case of a person that suffered from cholesterol. So in that case, that lady suffered from arthritis, and she was wheelchair-bound. That's how bad her arthritis were. The medication was 15,000 rand a month, and I'm talking 15 years ago. So 15,000 rand is a whack lot of money. Those years today, it's still. So obviously the medical scheme said, no, we're not going to pay for this, you know. And we showed that it is clinically appropriate to pay for it. We showed that it's, first of all, a PMB. So we need to go and look at, is it a PMB? So we saw that it is a PMB. Then in the prescribed minimum benefits, the chronic disease list, or in a prescribed minimum benefits, in the regulations, it speaks about regulation 15I, sub-regulation C, says that if the medication is ineffective, cause or would cause harm, appropriate substitution must be made to that beneficiary. So what it says, in this lady's case, most of the arthritis medication at that stage was sulfur-based, and she's highly allergic to sulfur. If she receives medication that has sulfur in it, she doesn't get a itching sensation. She doesn't cough or feel bad. She lands up in ICU. That's how bad it is.
So I must just tell you, my father was allergic to sulfur, so he couldn't have any of the sulfur antibiotics. Exactly that. It would kill him. So, yeah, absolutely, a real condition.
Yeah. It's a real condition. So, and in that case, so is the medication ineffective for cause, would cause harm? Guaranteed. It's there. We could prove it. And then appropriate substitution must be made to that beneficiary. Now, the medical scheme argued that if they had to provide this to everybody that have got arthritis, that it will cripple the medical scheme. And I often use this argument. But that's not true. That's not what the Act says. The Act says if it is ineffective to that person, appropriate substitution must be made to that person. And I think that's important. Recently, we had a case where a gentleman, and it's a very emotional case, the gentleman suffers from hyperlipidemia, cholesterol, and his cholesterol count, after being 30 years on cholesterol medication and using it, was 13.5. Now, you would know that is dangerously high. And there's another medication available that costs about 6,000 rand a month. He's on an option where he pays 4,500 rand. So obviously, we know what a medical scheme don't want to do is they don't want to pay for this medication. We could show also that it is ineffective or would cause harm. And we could show that the other medication is more effective. In fact, he used the other medication for 1 month, and his cholesterol dropped to 3.5.
Sure.
So we could show that, and therefore the Council for Medical Schemes adjudicated the matter in our favor, and the medical scheme had to pay the medication in full. So when you look at these cases, you always need to look at, do you have a legal basis? So is it a prescribed minimum benefit? Yes, it is a prescribed minimum benefit. Similar, let's also use another example, hormone treatment, hormone replacement treatment.
That's, I'm getting, Andre, so many women are complaining about this because it is supposedly a PMB, but the medical schemes are not paying for it.
Yes, now let's look at it. Why don't they? But I'll get to that one now. So we just need to look at, is there a legal basis for it? Mm. Okay. Then the second issue is there a medical necessity for it? So the two cases that I explained, I could show the medical necessity for it. And the other one And that is often forgotten in the medical scheme environment. And when one takes this matter on with the medical schemes, either in the dispute committee or to the Council for Medical Schemes, there's a matter of fairness. And if you go and look at the composition of the dispute committees, and you go and look at the composition of the appeal council, you always see that there's people with a legal expertise, there's people with clinical expertise in that, and you see that there's also people with a consumer approach in those committees. So you need to look at all three. If you can tick all three boxes, you actually have a very good chance to succeed. But the legal point being the most important, there must be a legal right. So if you look at hormone replacement therapy as an example, the one first have to go and look is, does it form part of the prescribed minimum benefits? And it does. The specific code is 528M, which is female reproductive system. But now one needs to go and look, the second level of investigation is to go and look at what is the ICD-10 code, the International Classification of Diseases code that is used. And so, for instance, the code for extras and excess is E28.0. So if there's an extras and excess, then that's 28.0. If it's a primary ovarian failure, the code is E28.3. If it's excessive bleeding of premenopausal period, then it's N92.4. So the issue is, what is the code? And your doctor can help you with that. The doctor knows that better, because we won't know that. Me and you won't know that. There's more than 14,000 codes that is prescribed minimum benefits. So it's impossible for the consumer to know that, but your doctor will know whether it is a PMB. And when it is a PMB, then the following must be paid. It's the visit to the doctor, the consultation or the specialist. It is the test that is done, if there's clinical test that must be done, whether it's a scan, whether it's a blood test or whatever, the test that needs to be done. And the third thing is then the medication. And what must be paid? They must then pay that at cost, whatever that cost is. Now, a medical scheme can come and say, no, but we only, for this specific condition, we allow you to go 3 times a year to a doctor. That's called a formulary. Or we allow you to do 1 test a year. They can have those requirements, and they can say, okay, but we only pay for these medication. We call that, that's a protocol, and in a formulary is the type of medication that the medical scheme will pay for. Now, the protocol and a formulary must be, exceptions must be made if that is ineffective, cause or weak cause harm. So hopefully that will satisfy it. And fortunately, it's a complex issue. So you need to get an intermediary that knows exactly how these things work. And what the legislation says, what the medical criteria is, what the codes are, and that the doctor will also help with. And you need to argue it on a fairness basis also.
So it is actually really important, those codes. I mean, that's one thing I've learned, is codes are extremely important. And sometimes the doctors do get them wrong, and then you've got to go back, and it's a bit of an issue. But what I'm finding interesting is that there can also be a limitation to the treatment. My concept of PMBs always was, well, you know, there's no limitation to it. So I also had a case, a woman contacting me for depression, and she had to have 12 sessions with a psychologist, and they would only pay for 4. Are they allowed, and in clinical depression, are they allowed to limit the number of doctor visits then?
Yes, they are. But in depression is a difficult one, but remember the exception. So that limitation is then on the protocol, and that specific regulation also says if the protocol is ineffective, cause or would cause harm, appropriate substitution must be made. So in the vast majority of people with a mental illness, 4 consultations would be acceptable. But in that person with their specific history of whatever reasons, There might be a case to be made, but it is difficult to prove that. In the examples that I gave you, the two examples, it was actually quite easy to give those exceptions and to make those exceptions. Mental illness will be a more difficult one to be made. But every person, and that is something that I've learned many years ago from the person that started prescribed minimum benefits at a Council for Medical Schemes, Prof. Jan. And he says, medicine is not the exact science. And basically what that means, and that is why these exceptions are there, is because our bodies react differently. So for the vast majority of people, a certain number of consultations will be sufficient. For other people, it will not. And for those people, exceptions must be made.
And know how to go and apply those exceptions. Because I think that's, my mother says, I need this, oh, we don't cover it. That seems to be the standard response from her medical scheme. I won't mention which one. But I think many people feel that that's the way their medical schemes are. They just say no. So you've got to know how to follow up and to find out. But Andrea, I think they also, and maybe in defense of the medical schemes, there is this balance. And I think it's important for listeners to understand that a medical scheme doesn't make a profit. The administrator makes a profit, but the scheme can only pay out what it gets in. Okay. So if they suddenly have excessive claims, they can go under, which just happened to Health Squared. Medical schemes can actually collapse. So they do have a duty to other members to make sure that they're not overpaying on claims. And I have seen so many, and we spoke a little bit earlier about my doctor overcharging me. The medical profession, the medical scheme is not going to blindly trust the doctor to say, well, I think I need to spend this amount of, this person needs to spend this amount of money with me. So there's this, to what degree should a medical scheme also play a little bit of a gatekeeper on doctors? And this is another complaint I had, which is completely different. A woman contacted me and she said her husband died of cancer, and the amount of unnecessary testing and treatment that happened and that really wiped her out. And she was angry that the medical scheme hadn't been more of a gatekeeper to the doctors. So this is a balance, and I think it's important to understand that.
I think it is something that is important to understand. It is a balance. One needs to understand also the role of the medical scheme. The medical scheme really have they are funder of healthcare. They are not a provider of healthcare, and it's very difficult for a medical scheme to interfere in that relationship. You have a relationship with the funder that funds your medical scheme. In the Act, it talks about the defraying of expenses. So the medical scheme defray your medical expenses. But the doctor is in a contractual arrangement with you to say, I will, for rendering these and these services, you will pay me a certain amount of money. And you say, I don't have the money, I send it to the medical scheme, who will pay that. But the medical scheme themselves do not have that responsibility to manage that arrangement. You are right also to say that a medical scheme is a not-for-profit. It doesn't say non-profit. It says a not-for-profit. So it means the profits that the medical scheme would make goes back to the members. In the Health Squared case, if there's money left over, it is divided up between all the members that were members of Health Squared at the stage were liquidated. But in terms of some of the other medical schemes, you get self-administered medical schemes that do not have an administrator, which administers it themselves. But you are right, whatever comes into a medical scheme can only be paid out to benefits after you have also paid your cost of managing that. And that's limited. To give you an example, in 2021, the surplus that medical schemes made were 820 million rand. It sounds a lot. It works out at about 40 cents a beneficiary a month.
Exactly.
So
So they're
that's easy to get
literally
wrong.
on the fine line of claims.
Quite even.
Very important to understand.
Yes.
Sorry, I just thought I
Yes.
should just mention, I don't know if you're picking it up, but for the listeners, I'm sitting in an electrical storm right now. So if there's a strange rumbling in the background, Andre, it's a storm going on. And Andre, what I wanted to ask you before we wind up, very important question is about you spoke about people often paying more than they need to for their medical scheme. And as I said, that my advisor helped me a lot with that. How do you go about selecting the right medical scheme for your needs?
It's a very difficult question. It is a question of understanding really what your needs are. On the one side, your healthcare needs, but on the other side, also what your financial needs. Medical schemes is a financial instrument, and therefore we also need to understand our financial needs. And what I'm talking about financial needs is some people can afford the catastrophic event. Of a hospital event that happens, and they can fund it themselves. Some people can't. The most people can't. But of those group of people that can't afford it, some of them cannot afford and do not have the disposable income to suddenly pay out 600 or 700 or 800 rand to a doctor for a visit, and then 1,000 rand for the medication. So they just don't have that disposable income or the discipline to put that money away. So it depends on what is your relationship with money in a certain sense. What cash flow do you have available if that happens? Can you fund that yourself? And then you have to balance it also with what is your disposable income? What can you really afford? So for some people, a hospital plan will only cover hospitalization and your chronic benefits. And that person will say, I have sufficient cash flow to fund a normal doctor's visit. Some people would say, now I need a bit of support. I need a savings plan to that, where there's a bit of money available. And then people that really have high expenses on a day-to-day basis might say, I rather would want a traditional medical scheme or a new generation scheme where there's a savings account, a bit of a self-payment gap, and then benefits after that. And some people will say, no, I want comprehensive cover. I want a bit of a saving. I want to have that control. But if I run out of benefits, I want the scheme to immediately kick in. And we call that hybrid funds. So there are those type of solutions. And the intermediary will sit down with you and you will go through that. But where I find people are often unhappy with their medical scheme, and they say the medical scheme doesn't work for me, is because the match between their needs, the financial needs, their healthcare needs, and the type of product that they purchase is wrong. So if one gets that right, people are luckier. But then there's something else. There's two things, two trends that I think people should actually consider also. The one trend is the trend to make use what we call efficiency discounted options or network options. So basically what that tells you go to a specific hospital. You're only allowed to go to a specific hospital, so your rights to go to any hospital is limited. And for that limitation in rights, you then have the opportunity to receive a discount of up to 25% of your contribution. Now, if we take an example of the 6,000 rand, that is 1,500 rand a month saving for the same benefits. So that's a clever way to do it. Then there's another trend, and specifically, it's used with general practitioners, but you can either go to a normal general practitioner and pay, and that money comes from your savings account or your allocated amount of money that you have for day-to-day expenses in a traditional fund. It costs between 650 and 850 rand for that consultation. But if you go to the local Choice or Dis-Chem or Clicks pharmacies, they have a clinic. And that sister is usually linked to a doctor on the internet, and we can make use of these virtual consultations. And that virtual consultations in some providers cost R200 for a consultation. Now, if that's my money, I own it. Remember, I spoke about own it. It's my money. If I can either choose to spend R850 for a consultation, or I can choose to spend R200 for a consultation. And the nice thing is, if that virtual consultation, the agreement works as follows, is that if they can't treat you, if the doctor says, no, you need to see somebody physically, then you don't pay for that consultation. So there's no downside actually to that process. There's only a gain in that.
And that's actually a big trend of the virtual consultations, obviously since COVID and you know that has become a trend. I didn't realize it was such a, you know, that is a huge cost saving.
And it's a huge saving. I want to touch on something else, if I may. You had the podcast with Wynand Gijs.
Yes.
About living up to 100 years.
Yes.
Now, some interesting stats for you in that podcast is that in 2015, we had 45,800 people that was older than 85 on medical schemes. In 2021, that is 58%. So Wynand spoke about the life expectancy of people are increasing by 25%. It is 27% on the medical schemes. Spot on. Stats 100% correct. But we actually currently have on our medical schemes more than 222 people that is older than 100. And in 2021,
how many?
222
people over 100.
Over 100, and we have four people that is 122 years old, and last year one person that was 122 years old joined a medical scheme. So we had three, we now have four. So they were born in 1900. So, but just shows that how important medical schemes are. And how challenging it is for medical schemes to manage their expenses, because our population also gets older
I was actually speaking to someone at BestMed, I think, and he was telling me that for the average age, for every year, so your average age of your member, for every year that increases by 1 year, claims increase by 1.5 to 2%. So that's very significant. So the older your average member is, the higher your claims are going to be, which is the higher premiums you're going to be paying in the future. So bringing on young people is critical for a medical scheme's health. I mean, you know, really, I mean, that's your health, but your medical scheme's health is young people.
It's definitely true. But one of the actuaries, healthcare actuaries, have a saying that there's no such thing as a bad risk. There's just a bad premium to that risk. And it's a huge debate in our industry about risk rating. And we have a community rating where it doesn't matter that 122-year-old person pays exactly the same as the young person of 20 years old that joins a medical scheme for the same option. But the question is actually, and that's the battle that we have in our industry, is how do we change the health of that person? What can we do to improve their health? And in the acronym ACTION, I said one of the things that we need to do is that we need to own it. We need to also look and stay healthy and find ways to actually stay healthy. And if I can share with you a personal experience, I was on chronic medication for cholesterol, for high blood pressure, for gout, exactly the same with my wife. We changed our lifestyle and we don't use any chronic medication, and we are in the upper, I am in the upper 50s. My wife will be 50 next year. So that just shows you an example. Now, by doing that, we actually reverse the aging process. And I think that is important, is if we look at our health and if we stay healthy, and we know all these tricks, we know we need to not smoke, we know we need to drink moderately alcohol, consume alcohol, we know we need to sleep well, we know we need to manage our stress. So if we look at those type of things and we change that, there's 8 lifestyle behaviors that leads to 15 chronic conditions and 80% of the healthcare costs. So the challenge is not really only getting younger people onto the scheme, but actually reversing the claims experience of the people that you have, getting people to be healthier.
Which is why we're seeing such drivers by things like Discovery's Vitality, Momentum's Multiply, all of these rewards that you get. People always say, why are you rewarding me for this? Because we will reduce claims. Claims will make the scheme, you know, healthier as well. So very, very important. Yeah. And I do think that you know, this challenge of not being able to increase premiums for people who are making bad lifestyle choices like smokers is, yeah, it does impact the overall cost of these schemes. So yeah. I think our schemes are trying to work within that framework. How do we reward behavior? How do we give back? And I must tell you, I happen to be with Momentum Multiply. I get back, my husband and I, because we exercise, get back 600 rand a month in cash into our savings account. So that's another way that we actually effectively reduce our premium by being healthy. So that's definitely, yeah, ways to do it. But Andre, you and I could sit for another hour talking, I think. So I'm definitely going to have to get you back on, maybe ask next time for questions from our listeners and we can deal with them. But I've really enjoyed this time with you. And it's fantastic. And where can people get the book, Medical Schemes Explained?
They can get it on the website called medicalschemesexplained.co.za.
Great. I'll put the link.
It's 256 rand.
Yeah, I'll put the link into the podcast as well, so you can pick it up there. And I think it's worthwhile. You're spending 6,000-7,000 rand a month on this. Spend a little bit of time educating yourself around it. So fantastic! Thanks, Andre.
Maya, what an honor! Thanks a lot.